Accession number 22087, Reel 12.
Corporal Weldon, Reel 12.
You were saying there was a bit of banter between officers and men occasionally.
Oh, yeah, there was. Because we were, I mean, after 3 years in the jungle and one thing, we were a bit deranged, you know. It was actual, you couldn't get away from it, you know, it was slightly mad. And this officer was a nice gentleman. And now Penry said, "How's things?" He says, "Oh," he says, "not very good at all." He says, "Do you think, sir," he says, "when you get your case of gin comes through, there'll be enough room in it for a packet of gramophone needles for us?" He said, "We haven't had Viril in for over a month." And the answer from the officer was, "Oh, don't be like that, Penry."
Who was Pinner? What sort
Pinner,
of cat was
Pinner, he was another driver, same as me. Oh. Ginger, he was a rum lad, and he had an Alsatian dog.
In the jungle?
Yeah, this dog, it came with us right the way through Burma, all the way, and Bai was a good guard dog. He was a beauty. Mm-hmm. And he used to sit in the cab with Ginger, and he travelled all the way on the trains and boats and what have you from Secunderabad right down to Rangoon, but we couldn't take him to Indochina. We had to leave him behind at Tongu. But some army bloke, I think, had took him over, you know.
Do you know where Ginger had got him from originally?
I don't know. He got him somewhere in Secunderabad. That was way back in the middle of India, you know. And we was ever so grateful for him, you know, because he was such a... He was a beauty, and But he didn't like natives. He hated natives. And it was the same with the natives' dogs. They hated us. I don't know why, but that was how it went.
Aye. And you're saying you went to Saigon by air. Where were you emplaned?
It would be Zayatiquin, where we'd get on the plane. Mm. Left the lorries there, you know, and we changed from ACAT to commandos overnight. And we went in with Bren guns, hand grenades, and all that sort of stuff. And well, we took one jeep and a motorbike. Mm. That was the CO's jeep and a motorbike.
What sort of aircraft were you in?
DC-3s.
DC-3s.
And there'd be... What would it be, three or four men, and the rest was ammunition in the piled up in the middle, you know, because you've got to, when you load an aircraft, you've got to have your centre of gravity right, you know.
Get the trim right.
Get the trim right, and that was, and then off we goes, and the next thing, we lands at Bangkok. Mm-hmm. So, it was a refuelling job. We didn't know at the time, but later on we found out that the aircrew would not stop in Saigon until it was secure, and we were the people who was going to secure it.
What were you told when you were en route? Did you get any sort of briefing before you...
Oh, why, the pilot came through and told us, he says, "When I land," he said, "and I taxi and turn and face a certain direction and shut the engines off, I want you lot out of here and underneath my wingtip port side with the Bren gun and box of ammunition, you know." Because he says, "I don't know what the hell we're going to find when we get down, you know." I don't, charming. Anyways, luck would have it, we didn't have any problems.
But before you got on the aircraft, had you been given any sort of briefing before you emplaned?
No, just, "Yo, what's going to Saigon?" We're all off, you know, everybody. That was it. And the reason given was, it's Lord Louis, he wants his prisoners back as soon as possible.
Right.
And, of course, naturally, there wasn't a grumble among anybody, because we knew what them lads had been through. And if we could get them out, that we was there for, you see. Well, we flew in, but as it happened, there wasn't enough of us to do the job properly. We couldn't hold that airfield as it, there were the number of us, you know. So what they did, they rearmed the Japanese, And where our Bren gun finished, and you know, you all had arc of fire interlocking all the way around. There was the Japanese carried on, you know, and me being a driver, I'd be duty driver, I had to go downtown, pick up the Japanese orderly officer and an interpreter, our orderly officer, and then go around all the positions on the airfield, you know, at dusk. And as I say, it was a very funny situation to be in. I mean, we'd been up against them Japs all that time. You couldn't love them all at once, you know. Were very, very bitter. Because, one of the corporals, somebody spoke to one of the Japs. He played out with him. He said, "You talk to them bastards." He said, "So that was it."
And how did the Japanese behave? Did they try to make contact with you, or were they just...
They was very, very polite. You see, their way with prisoners was... and some of the prisoners that we saw, they said, "Now then, make them salute, yeah? You want to present arms off everyone." Because they didn't, with them rearming, you see, they had their arms. He says, "You want to present arms off everyone, officers the lot." And that's the way it was. And there was the bow as well, you know. Make them, you know, keep them at it. Because that's just, they give us hell, them blokes, he said. I think he was a Dutch ex-prisoner. There was quite a few prisoners roaming round Saigon, you know. And we meet them in the bars and what.
What about the French? Did you come across the French in Saigon?
I didn't like them blokes at all, because they, I don't know, they didn't want to know you. Didn't the French, the civvies either, you know. And then, as soon as there was a bit of trouble and a few bullets started flying around, there was, Monsieur Aviat de Leon Glandarin, there was all over you, you know. And yet before, when all was quiet and you wanted a cup of tea or something, they didn't understand and they hadn't got it, and, you know, there was a great shower. And then, that was, they looked a right shower. I know, we did our first armistice parade from there, and that was on November the 11th, around about that time, you know.
Yeah, Remembrance Day, wouldn't it be?
Yeah. And General Leclerc, he took the salute. He was there, you know.
Who took part in that parade then?
I did, aren't you?
You were there?
Yeah. I was the right-hand marker. And there was a, I don't know, he was English-speaking bloke, and he was walking backwards with this camera, and of course we was doing our utmost to be smart, you know, and we had to sort of improvise to, I mean, we'd no blanco, and we wanted white rifle strings, white gaiters and white belts. So we'd raided the Japanese stores and got some white dope, what they dope the airplanes, you know, white paint. The pipe looked marvellous, but it was alright just for the one day, you know. Made it look real smart. I'll show you the photographs anyway, with us all on parade. Wing Commander Allen, he was the leader of the band, and there was me and my mate Gordon and on the parade.
Who was the threat from? Why were you having to guard the airfield? And
it was the Annamites. Well, later on they were called Viet Cong.
Yeah.
But it was them. No way did they want the French back. They wanted to be independent. And it took us for being French as well. And they ambushed our CO, and them got, they were doing a recce round in his jeep. And George Winters, my mate, who was with us in Calcutta, he was driving, and there was Flight Sergeant CV and one or two more. And the only one to get clobbered was the best man out the whole bunch, was the squadron leader. And we hadn't had him very long, and it was a real gentleman, the best CO we'd ever had, one CO we had, he wasn't all that, I don't know, he was distant somehow, you know. Do as I say, not as I do, you know, one of them sort of. But they said he was a real gent. He saw me one day, and I hadn't met him, and he said, "How are you, man?" I said, "Sir." He says, because the bush hat I was wearing, it was old, it had got a hole in the front and all at the back, real tatty and greasy, you know. He said, "There's some new bush hats in the stores," he says. "Go and get one and tell them I sent you," he says, "and don't throw your old one away," he says, "keep that for going under your wagon." And I thought, "Well, what a gentleman." And he got one in the lung and he had to go in hospital. Did that squadron. I can't think of his name now, well, not offhand, but I think he was, I don't know, father of a big tennis player or someone, you know, some sort of a connection, you know.
Was there ever an attack on the airfield while you were guarding it?
There was one night, the mortar did, mm-hmm. but there were duds, they didn't go off.
Oh.
There's another bit of luck.
Indeed. Did you have anything to do with the natives, with the Annamites at all while you were?
Well, they lived in just over the wall from our village where we were.
Yes.
And the kids used to come and play in our hut. And the mothers used to do the washing, you know, for a bit of soap and one thing or another. And we used to say, "Oh, little buggers, there's your lot here and your mother doing the washing." And we never saw any men. Them buggers would be out at night time looking for us, you know. Because every time you went from the airfield down into town and coming back, you used to cross a bridge. And every time you come to cross this bridge, there was a load of small arms fire, you know. And he used to say, "Get down, we're coming to the bridge." And they'd all lay on the floor, you know. And we'd put the foot down and, "All right, everybody all right? Yeah, all right."
How long did that go on for, that random shooting?
Oh, it was on all time we was there. Mm. And when did I leave? Oh. That was arrived in Saigon on the 1st of September,
mm.
and I left on the 24th of December, and it was still at it then.
So you went out on Christmas Eve then?
I was repatriated on service, you know, time expired.
Was that?
So the time abroad for a single man was 4 years.
Yes.
And 3 years for married.
So you'd been abroad for your full.
Mm.
time.
Mm. And that we used to, one of the places we guarded was the teleprinter room. Mm. I don't know how they work, but they were getting messages all night long, and he's who's on and so and so and so and so, oh, you know, numbers up, you know.
Did you have advance warning then that your number was coming up when you were going to be going?
No, you had a rough idea.
You had a rough idea, yeah.
And then it would come through, you were off, you know. Mm. There was the big worry was, I hope the Lincoln aircraft keeps flying, you know, because there's such thing as crashes. So there we go, that was that, you know. And then we get on the aircraft to come back, and all this stuff was lashed in the middle, and the troops, about 20 men on board the Dakota, and their kit. And, off we goes, and way up in the blue yonder, and flying up Burma, you know, to Mactilla of all places. And circled round, and came into land, and it was Christmas Day. And things in the Air Force at Christmas go all pear-shaped. The CO becomes an LAC, and the youngest airman becomes the CO, and all that daft carry on. And we lands there and taxis up to the end, and out comes a bullock cart. Who was driving the bullock cart but this group captain dressed up as an leading aircraftsman, you know. And he texts all the crew, the air crew, say air crew and ground crew, air crew and passengers, we went in the main canteen, and the air crew, they went round the back somewhere. I'm sure they was on the hard stuff, you know. We was on tea. And it's tea and a wad, you know. And then there was no balloon, so they'd got a lot of condoms and blown them up, you know. Is your ride really necessary? Because there were civilians coming through, you see. It was the main route from Indochina through to Calcutta with the prisoners and whatever. And there was female prisoners as well, you know, that was coming through. Anyway, we gets on board and gets all strapped in, and off we goes down the runway and up and round. And you're looking out the window and the earth goes like that there, and I thought, oh, don't do that.
They were tilting the aircraft about.
Yeah, it was, you know, like a drinking Spitfire, you know.
Banking over.
Banking over and swooping down and up and well, I wasn't half hour glad when he set course and set off for Calcutta, you know. Phew. Aye.
Well, and did you get back all the way to England by air? Was that the way?
No. We stopped at Rangoon, Mingland on Airfield. And that was it for the night on the 24th. And we thought, well, there'd be nothing doing 25th, that's it, you know. Damn me. 5 o'clock, you lot, on the ready for the gharry to go. You're off to Calcutta. So we climbed aboard and off to Calcutta. And when we did get to Calcutta, and we gets to the camp, the Christmas dinner had all gone. There was just the chip fuselages left and very little else. So we got sort of sorted out, found a bed, and then we went downtown to Fairposes. That was a Fairpose Forces restaurant, you know. It was well known in Chowringhee, and we goes in there, and I don't know, it wasn't half costing us somewhat. We were having to bribe the waiter to get beer, and it was an enormous price. It was a lot cheaper to drink spirits.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know, it was funny that, the way it went, you know. I can't just, 4 or 5, I can't think of the, you know, but it was outrageous, was the price. And then you had to give him a rupee to even get it, you know. So we didn't drink a lot of that. We had a nice dinner.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't have been in there, really, because it was officers only. We thought, oh, it's Christmas, you know. And then the forces, other ranks, fair poles, was round Dalhousie Square near the Black Hall of Calcutta in that area. And the governor's house was opposite side of the road. And you could sit looking out the window and having a meal, and you could see the Spitfires. They used to come flying under the window. They was landing on the road. They'd put some barrels across to stop traffic. And there was a prevailing wind from the docks coming up this road. It was ideal for
Spitfires
to come in, you know. So, that was that. And then, as I say, it was the old transit camp again. And a day or two, and we was on the train down to Secunderabad. That's in central, you know. That was well.
You'd been there before, hadn't you?
Was the depot. Yeah, Secunderabad.
How long did you have to stay there before you got?
It was only a matter of getting sorted out and getting you. There's a lot of paperwork to.
Yes.
You know, clearances to do and get your kit, what you'd been left there, well, all that time, you know. Some was missing and some white ants had eaten it and that.
What sort of things were you short of?
But I had to have a brand new one anyway in the end, so I come off best in the end. Great coat, got brand new, great coat, but it's a beaut. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was anything else. Oh, there was a suit of blues, you know, for England, British. I wasn't a corporal them days, I was only in LAC. Come back LAC, you know. Right, so that was it. And then we got on the old Madras Mail from wherever it was down to Secunderabad. And then after that we had to come all the way back up to Bombay to a place, a transit camp called Worli. When it was... when we went out there, that was still a transit camp, but there was all hotels and houses on the front that were all commandeered, and we was in them. That was where I come across the first cobra I ever saw, was in the back garden of this blinking house in Bombay. And somebody said, if you clobber that one, they'll be its mate here tomorrow, you know, and they did go in pairs. So...
What did you do about it?
I don't know, I think he got away. I don't remember killing it. I remember being scared though, you know. I mean, that was when I first went out, you know.
Yes.
With the white knees and all and all the rest of it. Stop it a minute.
How did you eventually get back to England? What
Well, we got to Bombay and we're mooching around there waiting for a ship. And eventually, meeting pals that had been out there and we'd never seen one another all the time, and all of a sudden we found ourselves waiting for the same boat. Who's the Yorkie? I am. Where are you from? Beverly. Oh, where are you from? Witherensea. Oh, you know. Where you been? Been all over the place, like. Right? And it arrived, it was the... what was the name of that ship? It was a smash. It was a motor vessel. HMT... Reno del Pacifico.
Reno del Pacifico.
That was the name of the troop ship. And she'd been on the, was it South American run? Because everything was in Spanish and English.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it was a beautiful ship, that was. And of course we sailed through the Suez Canal, which was all different. When we went out, we went right round the Cape.
What sort of accommodation did you have on the Reina del Pacifico?
It was quite nice. It was in the holds on hammocks, you know. No beds. There might have been. There was some used to sleep. She was done out as a troop ship with fixtures of tables, and you'd have 16, 8 at each side. And then you'd sling your hammocks at night.
Yeah.
Then them that didn't want to sleep in hammocks, they'd sleep on the forms, under the table and on the table, you know.
What did you do? Did you use the hammock?
I used the hammock, aye. It's just, if it was rough, the hammock was the best bet. And now going out, when it was going round the Cape, it was rough. And the ship was at an angle like that, you know.
45 degrees.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know. And when you see the crew running about with life jackets on, you know, things that, there was thousands of us on board, you know, and if you didn't get there early, if it was a nice day, you couldn't get laid out in the sunbedding because they weren't around.
Was the ship sailing on its own or was it part of a convoy?
Coming home it was on its own, there was no convoy there.
Did you stop at all in Egypt, or did you just go through on the canal?
No, that was a funny part of it. First thing that happened, when you get near this canal, they fix a big searchlight on the bows of the ship. You know, temporary. And then, because they're going through at night, as well as daytime, I don't think they can get through in a day. So they have this big searchlight on the front, you know, and then when they get to the, was it Port Tewfik, or one end anyway, they take it off, and then off you go again through the Bay of Biscayne round to, into Liverpool, to the Princess Landing Stage, the one where we set off from.
But did you have any port stops on the way where you could get off, or were you on the trip all the time?
No, there was no way you could get off. When we was going out, we had 2 half days where we went route marching, you know, and that was all. But that was a longer journey.
What impression did you get of England when you got back, when you got ashore at Liverpool?
I was pleased to be back, and it was February, it was cold, you know. And there was a yank poked his nose round the corner, and there was a big boo went up from the all the lads, you know. Then there's a photographer come out, and he was wanting pictures of the happy returning soldiers and sailors and airmen from the Far East. And he do this, do that, and he yoked himself. He didn't want to know his own was out there. He bloody managed without us now. Give him 2 fingers and a raspberry. Well, all of us like that. And then we get off, and we go from Liverpool to Blackpool in the digs on the front. Lady, you know, the boarding houses.
Yes.
And that was all right. And so we've been longing for a nice cool English pint. So we goes into this real big bar, you know, pint. All ordered a pint, you know. And there wasn't one of us got only that far down that couldn't drink it.
Why not?
Dunno, we hadn't had it for that long. There was no way we could drink beer. It was a case of having to, you know, gradually get into it again, you know.
You were out of practice?
No, definitely. But my insides was all upside down. I mean, I don't know what was... I couldn't eat liver or fish and chips or anything, you know. I was in the right state. I finished up. And my mother was trying to feed us up with whale meat, because it was rationing, you know, and I was thin as a lat, you know, I was 9 stone, I think, that was all I weighed. And the rations in one thing or another, I used to be sick in the morning like some pregnant tart, and liver, it come on, they wanted us to sign, this was when I was at Wimbledon as a driving instructor, you know, and they wanted us to sign on. He says, oh, you can have another tape and make you sergeant. And I said, no thank you, I'm off out. And I came out, and eventually I went to see the doctor, and it was blinking stomachitis, I can't think of the name of it. And what I was doing wrong, I should have been off the fat and dairy products and everything, fish, but boiled and all such as that. And as soon as I got onto this diet, leaving fat alone, no butter, no milk, and you know, things improved. Gastroenteritis, that was the name of it.
So you cleared up once you'd got...
It cleared up when I got onto the diet, you know, and it gradually got stronger.
What was it that made you want to leave then? Was it just...
Well, to leave the Air Force.
Yes.
Well, the reason was it was very hard work trying to teach people who didn't want to know.
Oh.
You see, there was any... You know what you call it then? National servicemen.
Yes.
And they were being shanghaied in, you know. They wasn't, I mean, we went, I was a volunteer. And we had a different attitude. I mean, their attitude was, if they could get away with it, they would, you know. And I said, no, I've had enough, I'm off out. And that was it.
What did you do when you came out then?
Well, I went round and been a motor mechanic. But